Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
It didn't look like the reboot was going to work in the beginning, and I was not in a good place.
Like, in what capacity?
Just depressed, and I think one of the most important things that entrepreneurs and founders need is resilience. I think you need to be able to, like, roll with the punches, and I just felt like I had no shock absorbers, and I was constantly in self-doubt, and that was, like, dark times, for sure.
Let me set the stage for you. Terminal B, JFK Airport. I'm on my way to San Francisco to report on yet another tech story. I've made this trip many times in my career. I stop and go to Hudson News, where I look up and I see the founders of tech companies on the covers of these magazines lining the newsstands. And man, does it all look so perfect, so easy. They look so successful. But I knew a lot of them before they were on the covers. I told the story of their companies right at the beginning. And I think we do this thing when it comes to founders. We celebrate the wins without really truly understanding that there's a real zigzag to success. It's a myth that those wins don't come without an extraordinary amount of resilience, a lot of pain, and also self-doubt. It's never just a straight line. I've stepped into low moments for founders, watched them become the people you see on the cover of those magazines. And so, for me, the backstory is just much more interesting, which is why I appreciate our first guest, Justin McCloyd. He's CEO of massively popular dating app Hinge. Some Hinge stats for you. They are literally setting up a date every 4 seconds in the US and the UK. Their active user base has increased around 400% in the last year. But it wasn't always that way. And there was a moment he thought he could lose everything. I mean, not just his company, also the woman he loved. Okay, I feel like this is sounding a little bit like a movie trailer, but here's what's really interesting to me. Justin is this guy with a tremendous potential for both great success and also failure. I think there's actually a fine line between the two. He knows the extremes, he's lived them. This is his path, the work he did, and what he's thinking about when it comes to the responsibility of solving the deeply personal problem of love in the tech era. I'm Lori Siegel, and this is First Contact. We're calling the show First Contact, and that's because I go back and talk about, like, what was my first contact with the people I'm interviewing. And our first contact was 2015, right? When I was at CNN and I was, like, fascinated by the landscape of dating apps. They were coming up. And we did a whole series called Love, Inc. And I interviewed you about dating apps in the future. And
here we are in the future.
I mean, but that was like certainly a crazy moment. We were both children then. Like a lot happens in 4 years.
I know, we looked like children.
I know, that's upsetting. I mean, super upsetting. We looked a lot younger, and especially in tech years. But like 2015 was a fascinating year for you guys, right?
2015, 2016, yeah. So 2015, at the end of the year, we decided to completely, essentially rip down the existing app. I had to let go of half the team because we really had to start over from scratch. And it was just, we were already 30 people. It was just too many people to bring along on the journey of starting something from scratch again. And wanted to build something that, you know, at the time, Hinge was another app with the swipe feature and kind of felt a little bit casual. And I just don't think it was really helping people connect, which is what I think people really wanted. You know, they came onto these sites to find their person and to really connect. And I think the interface had become really gamified and kind of fun, but not really helping people meet their needs.
Why did you want to do this in the first place? I mean, like, I'm looking at you and like I'm thinking, like, why love? Why is like love the problem you wanted to solve?
I mean, it's the biggest problem. I mean, it's when you think about it, it's the like the person that we choose for our partner, for our long-term partner, is like the most important decision that we ever make in our lives. And most of us make it like with very little understanding, very little research, very little options, and we just, and especially, you know, back in the day. And I think, you know, the idea that we could help design around that problem and really help people make the best decision for them seemed like...
But like, take me back to the early days.
Yeah.
Because, okay, I get it. Okay, you're like a founder and I totally get it.
I wanted a girlfriend. So
okay, yeah. That sounds great.
Okay, so really, that's all true in retrospect as I examine
But like, I buy what you're selling there. I totally believe that. And I think you compared to some of the other tech founders, I know a lot of the tech founders, I genuinely believe that. But like, okay.
Yeah.
Why'd you start it?
Well, because my college girlfriend, Kate, mm-hmm. We dated all through college and then broke up. And I was just like, I was a hot mess during college. And
in what sense?
Just like, I was getting sent to rehab every summer. I was like a bad kid and like bad news. And she was like very prototypical, like showed up, like never had a drink, like never kissed a boy. And I was like teaching kids how to do drugs on my first day of college. So we were very opposite, and I was just in so much trouble. I literally wasn't allowed to come back to my sophomore year of college without spending the summer in rehab. They're like, if you're going to come back, you have to go to rehab.
But that's kind of astounding. Look at you now. And I'll just say this because I think everyone looks at you now, as like, you're the Hinge CEO and Hinge is doing great and all this stuff. And like, I think so. And I only mean to like dig into this a teeny bit because it's like, you talk about the college days, and I find that some of the people who are capable of like the coolest shit and like the best stuff are also the people that battle with like extreme whatever it is, you know, you name it. So like I want to go back to like the you in college that is capable of doing all this, but at the time was just like a hot mess.
I've always been an extremist, you know, so like extreme hot mess and then throwing myself into work. But
what was it about you that was kind of attracted to the extremes? What did you struggle with?
I mean, really, if I think about it, it was lack of connection. I mean, really, when you think about what is addiction, it's kind of just like a really sad and narrow way to try to meet our needs for feeling okay with ourselves, for feeling connected. And when we're not good at feeling connected to people around us, to our work, to purpose, we go for the cheap alternative. And then the more that you spend time with a cheap alternative, the less that like the real stuff seems like an option anymore. Yeah. And you just get stuck in this spiral. And I think that's kind of how I felt. I just didn't have good tools.
And what changed for you?
Oh my God, so much.
Was there a turning point?
Well, there were a number of turning points. There are a few things. One is when I went and did my study abroad at the end of college, I was going to keep a journal of like all my exciting adventures. And what my journal ended up being was this like sad kind of like, I'm never going to drink again. And then like the next day I'd be drinking again. And I had this experience where I always thought like I loved to party, but I didn't think that, I always thought it was under my control. And if I didn't want to do it anymore, I wouldn't. But then I noticed myself in the journal every day writing, you know, I'm never going to do this again. And then like the next day, like doing it again and being like, oh my God, like there's this piece of me that doesn't want to, and there's this piece of me that does. And like, they're battling it out in here. And I feel like a schizophrenic, and it was a pretty scary moment for me. And I think that started to wake me up a little bit. And then losing Kate, and then not getting the job that I wanted, because I was convinced that I was like belonged at, you know, Goldman Sachs doing investment banking. Thank God I didn't end up there. And I just, well, the day I walked across the stage at graduating from college, I just said, that's it. And I stopped drinking. I stopped doing drugs. And I was like, I'm going to put my life together. And I don't really know what the point of living is if it's not partying, but I'm going to try to figure it out.
Why the day in college? Like, what was it? What was so symbolic about that day for you?
I was going down to D.C. to take a job I didn't really want because I, you know, it wasn't my first choice job. And I don't know, it just felt like this moment of like, it's time to turn it around. It's time to grow up. Like, if you keep doing this, I don't know. Maybe I'm like an egomaniac or something, but it's always envisioned I was going to do something bigger. And it just didn't seem like I was on the path to do anything big.
Yeah. Have you, you'd always been this person that just like had grand ambition to do something.
I think I did. Only child syndrome. I don't know. But I.
and so then Hinge was born in some capacity. And I think it's interesting because I've interviewed founders my whole career. And it's like in the rearview mirror, there's like the story of like, yes. And then we went to here and this happened. And like with yeah. like the luxury of perspective and we
right.
look and like.
So many of those are just totally.
It's like totally bullshit,
yeah,
right? I mean, they're based on some kind of truth, right?
Right.
But like when did it kind of come together that this was something that you're like, oh man, like I think I'm on to something real here.
Well, I mean, the original genesis really was I was dating someone my second year of business school, and it was 4 years later, and everyone I dated I compared to Kate, like the one that got away from college.
What was it about Kate?
You know, it was just one of the first people I ever really connected with and I ever really let the walls down with, and I don't know, but we just... We had this one, she sort of like, apparently she had a crush on me, and she came over to my dorm room one night because my next door neighbors were having a party and asked me to walk her home. And I walked her home and we had this like kiss. And then literally every day from then on to the rest of the year, we just spent together. I don't know. And there was just something. It just felt like home. I just instantly felt like home, and I'd never experienced that with anyone else and hadn't experienced it with anyone since. And
just like a certain level of comfort?
Yeah, I guess so. Comfort, affection. It was just magic. It was just totally magic, and I just couldn't get it out of my head. And I just couldn't find it. And I was like, this is really what I want. And so I broke up with the person I was dating from business school. And I reached out to Kate 4 years later. And at that point, she was living in London. She'd, you know, graduated. She actually transferred to Wellesley, then went to cooking school in Italy, and then went to, and she worked at Goldman. She went and got the job that I wanted, met a guy, moved with him to London. And then I reached out to her, and she's like, listen, I don't know if I can really trust you. Plus, I just think it's too late. Like, you've changed, I've changed. And so I was so heartbroken.
So how'd you feel when you get, that was an email that came back or?
No, it was, I sent her an email. I sent her like an apology letter, like, can we see each other again? Kind of, email. And then she called and we had a conversation and we'd actually originally, she said, okay, well, I'll meet back over the holidays and maybe we can see each other. And then she called back 2 days later and she's like, I can't do it. Like, if I see you, I don't know what's going to happen. And honestly, like, I've got a good life and it's stable. And like,
how'd you feel?
Oh my God, I was like destroyed. Yeah, I like didn't leave my room for a week. I was so sad. And because, you know, there's this piece of me that just always felt like Kate and I were going to end up together. And it just felt like I had like broken the universe or something. You know, just, I don't know, that sounds insane, but it just felt like I was like, we were meant to be together. And all of a sudden it was like that whole vision of my future just kind of like shattered. And I just felt really lost. And so then like very shortly after that, Harvard Business School is throwing a last chance dance party and they needed to, everyone's going to list their crushes, and if two people liked each other, they would let you know. And then I found out from the president of the student government that they weren't going to be like, he's like, oh, it's 1,000 people in our class and it's too complicated. Like, we talked to PricewaterhouseCoopers to see if they could like manage the process. And I was like, this is ridiculous. And so I got together with there was this girl in one of my classes that I like was convinced was going to list me. And so like I was so awkward at the time because I just stopped drinking. Like, I didn't really know how to like interact with people in the real world. And
by the way, let me tell you, I stopped drinking a year and a half ago, and there is something to be said for like the first times you go out to like these social situations and you have to speak to people when everyone's drinking and you just want to like hide in a corner and like not talk to anyone.
Exactly. So, especially when you're like mid-20s and like all the whole culture was just around partying.
Totally.
And I just felt like, and so I was like, oh, this is my chance. And so I built this little app with a friend from Google on Facebook that would allow people to list their crushes and then let you know. And then, I don't know, I just got like obsessed. I was like, this, like, why doesn't this exist? Why doesn't this exist all the time for all of us? And that was kind of the beginning of Hinge, because at the time, I mean, this is 2011, so, you know, no dating apps. Match.com existed and OkCupid existed, but people my age, contemporaries, like, didn't use online dating, and if you did, you were like, hush, hush about it. And it was just a completely different world at the time.
But there's something about, you know, even that moment and that need of wanting to have something to kind of hold on to. So I think that's really interesting that it kind of came out of you in this bad part of your life, like you kind of turning, you having the clarity to be able to be like, oh, well, there's kind of some need that I'm filling here.
Yeah, I mean, it was, and it just felt like, I don't know, like I'd had a couple other like startup ideas. I had an inkling that I wanted to work in the world of entrepreneurship and startups, although startups wasn't even like a word people used a lot.
Sure.
Yeah, it was kind of a different world. And but I had an inkling that I wanted to do entrepreneurship. And once this idea came, like I'd worked on a couple of other ideas, but I would have to like force myself to work on them. It felt like homework. And then once this idea came, it was just, I just wanted to work on it all the time. Like the algorithm piece of it and the user interface and like all this stuff, it just clicked with me.
How'd you know it was going to be something that was going to catch on?
Well, I just looked at the, you know, all these single people who want to date and want to find someone but don't. And then you just had to really figure out, like, why don't people use dating sites like Match.com right now? And ultimately is because, one, they cost a lot of money. And two, there were, like, these long, complicated sign-up processes that you'd fill out these, like, very long profiles. And it was just kind of a awkward experience and something that you would only do if like you were really struggling in the real world as a result. Like that's why I think it had such a stigma around it back then. And the trick was to integrate it with your existing social profiles and make it like a one-click sign-on experience. And then it's so easy. It's like, why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah.
And that is really what transformed. And that's what allowed these dating apps, I think, to really explode and take over that whole generation of people in their 20s.
Fast forward all these years, like things got really complicated. You know, it's like the infinite scroll is the issue with like the internet and like the infinite scroll of people becoming pixels and there being so many different options. So now we're in like a whole different scenario. And you guys have emerged as answer to that or at least try, if I'm reading it right.
Definitely.
Are trying to be that answer to that. And that was because of decisions you made back in 2015, the last time we had our first contact, right? Like
That's
the last
right.
time we met. It almost feels like the last time we met, you were like, you didn't tell me, but you were probably really struggling with like the idea of this, what you guys were, right?
Yeah, there was a moment, I don't remember exactly when we met in 2015, but I think it was around Thanksgiving that year that I really kind of had a moment to step back, and I was home with my family for Thanksgiving. And I just had a moment to reflect and realize like, this isn't what I wanted to build. And I don't think we're headed for success.
We have to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. But when we come back, Justin tells us how his own epic love story led to a change of heart that completely transformed his company.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I mean, one, our growth was strong, but it was starting to level off a little bit. Tinder and Bumble were in the market, and they were sort of very strong, and our products looked very similar. So one, I think it was like a market thing. It was like, okay, like our product looks like theirs. They're bigger than us. It's going to be really hard for us at this point to really catch them using the same strategy. But I think even bigger than that, so that was true. The other market thing that I think was happening was that we were just noticing people were like getting dejected with these dating app experiences, and the initial promise of them was like now people are just giving them hookup culture and people weren't happy with it. And all these people that were using it initially who were in their early 20s now were like in their mid 20s to late 20s, and they're starting to look for something more serious, and these products are like clearly not designed for that. So the opportunities really seemed there. And finally, I just wasn't in line with my values. And I think that gets in line with the fact that and 2015, by the way, is when Kate and I got back together. So that's a whole nother story. But, you know, Kate, the college girlfriend that rejected me in 2011 and was the genesis of Hinge, then came back in my life
like
in 2015.
It always comes back to Kate. So should we take a beat to go into, like, you went back and got Kate?
Right. So a New York Times reporter reached out to me because she had downloaded Hinge, and, like, the very first person that came up on her screen she matched with, and they met and they fell in love. And she's like, how did you know? You know, this first person that showed up my screen. And, you know, I have to admit, it was probably dumb luck. But we had the interview, and at the end of the interview, she asked, have you ever been in love? And I was like, well, once a long time ago, but I didn't realize it until it was too late. And at this point, it has been almost 8 years since I'd last seen Kate. And she asked me to tell her the story, and I told her the story, and she paused the tape recorder, and she's like, listen, I have to tell you a story. And she had this very reciprocal parallel story where she had this like incredible romance with this person that she met, and she was a photographer at the time. She was a war photographer over in Afghanistan, and on her way back she was supposed to rendezvous with him in Paris, and he came to Paris, but then he lost her number, and this is like the 80s, so you can't just like Facebook them. and they didn't meet, and she ended up marrying the next guy she dated, and he ended up marrying the next girl he dated. And fast forward 20 years, and they, she's doing a researching a story and comes across him and reaches out, and they connected, and it made her realize, I think it made him realize that he wanted to double down on his marriage, but it made her realize that, like, that she put everything she could into her marriage and it was time to move on. And that's when she downloaded Hinge. And she's like, don't make the same mistake that I did. Like, don't get me wrong. I don't regret my life. I love my kids. But like, like, you can still, like, go back and be with the one. And yeah. I know it was a pretty, like,
where were
and
you?
I'm like,
you guys
listen,
were in, like, a cafe or something?
We were out in, we were actually in Madison Square Park. We were sitting in Madison Square Park. And I'm like, lady, you're crazy. Like, you know, it's like been 7 years. She's engaged. She's getting married, like, in a few months. And really, like, trust me, it's too late. Like, I've moved on. She's moved on. She's like, I really think you're making a mistake. Like, you won't know until you put yourself out there. And I'm like, whatever. And then Hinge was throwing our launch party in London a couple months later. So I sent one last email, because I would email Kate every once a year on her birthday after that, but I never got a response back from 2011. And
what would you say?
Well, sometimes it would be like, hey, you know, I'm ready to be friends now if you want to be friends. And then the next year I'd be like, I'll come over with an engagement ring, like, whatever it takes. And I probably sounded like it. I'm probably nuts. But I sent her this last email, because after my most recent email, the engagement one, she'd sort of like blocked me on all the social medias. I'm like, okay, I'm like probably turning into a stalker.
Wait, I'm sorry. So she blocked you?
Yeah, she. Well, she. I mean,
sounds like she had good boundaries.
I later found out that it was more her fiance that was the blocker. But and so anyway, I sent her one last email and I just said, "Hey, gonna be in London. Would love 15 minutes. It's like weird to think I'm never gonna see you again. Would love 15 minutes just to say hi and goodbye." And I wake up the next morning and I get an email back, and she's like, "Hey, listen, can't really chat, but." I can talk this weekend if you want. And by the way, you're a terrible stalker because I moved to South Africa and then to Paris and now I'm living in Zurich. And so I'm not in London anymore, but I can chat with you on the phone if you want to chat on the phone this weekend. And so I drove to the airport and got on the next flight and flew to Zurich.
Like, literally, I mean, hold on. Like, because we're just, like, going over all this. So you, like, actually just, like, after you got that email, you just, like, drove to the airport?
Yeah, basically. I had a therapist appointment that morning, and with the therapist, it was my first time. It was like our first appointment. He's like, I just like to, like, do whatever, you know.
What did your therapist say?
I was like, well, I'm thinking about flying over to Switzerland to try to get my college girlfriend back, who I haven't seen in 8 years. I think he was a little overwhelmed. I didn't see him again as a client, and that was my one and only appointment with this guy. He was really nice though, and I left there and he helped me talk through it. And I'm just like, yeah, you know what? Like, I'm just like, what's the harm? Like, I'm going to do it. And so, I did. I literally, like, I went to work for like an hour and I bought the plane ticket. And then I went home, got a bag, and then drove to the airport, got on a red eye flight. And then the next morning she texted me. She's like, okay, like, you know, I can chat on the phone later today if you want. And I said, cool, because I'm going through customs in Zurich right now. And I sound crazy. I probably sound insane, but there's just this magic that we both, like, that I knew that we had. And we saw each other that day. And by the end of the day, she's like, she was getting married in about another month.
What was it like when you saw her?
Like, 50% of me thought, like, had this big romantic idea in mind. The other 50% of me was like, listen, like, it really has been 8 years. Like, you've changed so much in this period. I'm sure she's changed so much. Like, we're going to see each other and laugh this off, but at least we're going to get closure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was probably, like, 70% of me, honestly. But then there was this 30% that was like, maybe this will, like, you know.
Sure.
And, yeah, and we saw each other. Little did I know, for her, she was already, like, I mean, I think she, if she were here, she would say, like, she still thought about me, like, all the time. And once she decided to respond to that email, she knew that she would be, like, calling off the wedding. And... Mm-hmm. So we met and it was wild. We sat in this coffee shop and we talked for like 7 hours straight without even getting up to get like water.
Like, how did it feel when you saw her for the first time after all those years?
It was, I mean, within 5 minutes, I was like, I just had this feeling of like, what have I been doing without her? Like, it's just, I don't know. I just felt incomplete. I don't know how to, And that goes against all like the good love wisdom that's like, you know, be complete and then find your person.
Was there like a moment during that talk that you guys were both like, well, this is going to get weird because you're going to call for and get a lot of logistics have to go into like,
the, I mean, well, because, it started, again, the conversation started, she's like, well, obviously I'm not calling off my wedding or anything. And we were like chatting and then like 4 hours in, she's like, well, if I were going to call off the wedding. And then I think by the end of it, it was like, okay, well, I think I might be calling off the wedding. And so I stayed over in Zurich for a couple days. And then I flew to London for the launch party for Hinge.
I'm sure you were happy. I mean, like, how does one feel when, like, the love of their life just, like, says they're going to call off the wedding and you're going to your launch party at Hinge? Like, I'm sure you're, like, walking on water or something.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. Also a little stressful because, I mean, there was a lot of logistics and a lot of, and also, like, a holy, you know, crap, what did I just do? You know, like 1 minute living like the bachelor life in New York, and then the next minute, like, I, you know, she's moving back into my 350 square foot studio apartment in the West Village, and I'm like, am I sure I wanted to do that? You know, it's kind of almost a moment like, wait, what just happened? That was like such a whirlwind. And anyway, so she moved back the next week, and yeah. And it's been we could talk about this forever.
Sure. But
married and just have a baby. We have an eight week old baby.
Yeah, and, good. That's great. You're all in love and stuff. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. So we'll go back.
No, I love that.
We'll
I
go
think
back.
That's
and
great.
I think the thesis between back to your original question where we departed this in the first place is that my idea of what, and this is going to sound kind of ironic after this story, but my idea of what love was all about is not about a volume game. And I think that that's kind of the way that Hinge was originally designed. It's like, oh, you just got to find your perfect puzzle piece. So just like keep swiping until like you find your perfect person who has no flaws and like you have no flaws. And it's just like you just fit perfectly and you have no problems. Like that is kind of, I feel like, the mentality that these things create, because it really like flattens people. It makes them feel kind of like objects that they're kind of disposable and you can always get the next one. And what I wanted to create with the reboot of Hinge was to really slow people down, to humanize and like create depth in each of the profiles so that people really felt like people, to create ends for people to actually have meaningful conversations and connections, for people to be thoughtful about the likes they send. So that's why you have to choose something that you like on a profile as opposed to just like swiping people left and right. And it's much more about opening people up to be vulnerable and slowing people down. And that's what helps cause connection, not finding your perfect puzzle piece.
It's like once you met Kate and it sounds like you were happier in kind of your own personal life, you changed the ethos of the app in a way. And this is where we get into the geeky tech stuff that I find really fascinating, though. Like, you talk about like coding vulnerability and how do you make tech feel really human, and how do you use technology to create these human feelings, or, you know, because it can go both ways, as we both know.
Yeah.
And so how does Hinge actually code vulnerability?
Well, it's pretty, I think we made one really important decision early on, which is that we are going to make the, you know, in the early days of Hinge, and I think a lot of these other apps, their engineers and their growth people and their product people are all focused on like, how do we grow this thing faster? How do we get more engagement? How do we get more retention? And so every time they introduce a new feature, they introduce something, it's like that's their measure of success. Did it create more engagement, more retention? And what we decided to do is we were going to take an alternative tack and we were going to optimize around great first dates. Like every feature that we released, did it create more great first dates or less great first dates? And we had to start measuring. Dating apps aren't even asking, did you go on a date with this person? How was it? So we were like starting to measure that and optimize towards that. And so everything we release, we ask it, does it create more great dates or not? And so our tagline, designed to be deleted, is sort of raises that you came to us to feel connected and to have a great date. And what if we were like spent all our engineering talent and design talent around designing around the need that you're trying to meet versus the need we're trying to meet? And I think that led to a slower growth at first because it's not as viral and crazy. Yeah. But our bet is that over the long term, we'll win, right? We'll win in the market because ultimately, in all forms of entertainment, I think wear out. But if we're like truly like the utility, if we're the thing that's actually excellent at helping you get out on great dates, then that then like that is what leads to success. And we find that every time we make the product more successful, we actually grow faster.
And so it's these prompts that are designed. Do you guys work with a psychologist to talk about what works and what doesn't? And there are certain prompts designed to get you to be human in some capacity. Is that, I mean, how do you guys do that?
We decided, I mean, we certainly want to be available for what research is out there, but we take a really sort of like engineering approach to it, which is that we started by, honestly, we just like sat around the office like guessing. So we just like threw a bunch of ideas up on the wall and just and those were the original prompts. And then what we did is over time we learned which prompts lead to great conversations and dates and which ones lead to dead ends. And so like my go-to karaoke song, right? Like dead end, right? Whereas other things that really get you to open up a little bit more, like qualities I'm looking for in a plus one wedding date, or especially interactive ones.
I have that one on mine.
Cool.
It's like gets the most responses.
I feel like
my answer is great.
Because they get the conversation going, they get you to share a little bit more about yourself, even more than maybe you would share an initial first date, like if you met in the real world. So that's, and so we've optimized over time. We pull the ones that don't work, we learn from the ones that are working, and we develop more that are like that. And that's why I think it works pretty well now.
And are you finding like the numbers are good compared to what it was before? Because it certainly seems, I mean, part of why I'm excited to sit here with you too is like, it certainly seems like Hinge is kind of coming up above some of the other ones and in a way that it wasn't before. I think there was a moment, I mean, not to be, I feel like awkward.
No, go ahead.
Okay. you found love and you're very happy. So I feel like I can like
sit across from you. No, go for it. We're real. We can be real.
Yeah, I want to be real. I mean, there was like kind of a moment where Hinge was like not the one.
It was kind of the one for a minute in like 2014.
Totally.
And then it just got trampled.
But then it was like, not as many people. I don't want to say no one was on Hinge. That's awkward to say across from you. But like it wasn't
like. No, basically no one was on Hinge.
Okay.
I mean, let's be real. Like it was. And because also what happened in 2015 is when we made the bet to move over to the new platform, we kind of just were like, this is going to be painful, but we're just going to leave the app alone. Like, we're not going to do any, like, for a year, it just was totally static and stable and like, not like, you know, it was not a great experience. And then we released a new version, and then even the new version had some like kinks in it at the beginning. And so it wasn't until 2018 was a really great year. This has been a really great year for us, but we're really starting to grow fast. And I think all the hard work is paying off for sure.
But like, how do you sit with that? How do you sit with the discomfort of like change? I know that this now it's cool that we can sit here and talk about how you guys are kind of on the up. Not kind of, you guys are on the up. You guys are really emerging as the one that people are using because you've been coding these human experiences and all, and we're at this moment. What a lot of people don't talk about in the startup world, and what I like to talk about, is like that zigzag of success. How
it's so many.
It's really, really hard, and you have to trust your instinct. And everyone is like, "You're wrong. Why aren't you doing this?" And you have investor money, and like, you had to probably sit, I'm assuming, with like a couple years of like, "Am I doing the right thing?" Like, how do you sit?
And, it's stressful.
You look pretty like good right now. So like, I'm assuming like you took care of yourself. How do you sit with that? You know,
Some days are better than others.
Or how do you even trust yourself that you're making the right decision?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a tough one. I definitely had my confidence shaken a couple times during this process pretty badly, and it was hard. It was honestly hard to trust myself again. And I think I went through a period of not trusting myself, and I don't think that was good for the company. I really tried to get like, it's such a long journey. I'll say that high level, one, I've just taken a lot. I mean, you can get a sense of like taking a lot of risks. I'm definitely not a risk averse person. And as you take risk and as you succeed and as you fail a bunch of times, then you realize like, you know, it, like failure doesn't kill you, and you just get up and you like show up the next day. And I think you just become a little bit less averse to like risk because you become less averse to failure because you're just like, well, you know, okay, then you just have to get over yourself a little bit and like move on to the next thing. But certainly when there's the pressure and we have like, you know, 100 investors on our cap table and raised many millions of dollars, and there's many people that work for you whose livelihood are depending upon you, then it gets a little bit more intense for sure. It's not as you can't be as flippant about it anymore. And that was hard. It was really hard. I mean, really dark times, like really depressed at certain points. Like it didn't look like the reboot was going to work in the beginning. And I mean, like, you can talk to Kate, but I was not in a good place.
Like, and, in what capacity?
Just depressed and having to drag myself into work every day and feeling like I think one of the most important things that entrepreneurs and founders need is resilience. I think you need to be able to, like, roll with the punches. And I just felt like for, like, 6 to 9 months, like, I had no shock absorbers. You know what I mean? Like, it's just every, like, bad, like, I'd be having a good day and then I get one piece of bad news and it was just like, it would, like, take all the wind out of my sails. And I was constantly in self-doubt and yeah, that was, like, dark times for sure.
We have to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. But when we come back, Justin's going to open up about how he worked through some real self-doubt and depression, and also the practical tools he uses to take care of himself during hard times.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's Pacaso.com.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
I remember talking to the Lyft founder who talked about depression too. Like, about, I think it's really lonely at the top too.
Yeah. Sole founder for, you know, 8.5 years now, 9 years. So.
Yeah. Like, who do you talk to when, because I think probably for you, you have all these people who are looking to you to be optimistic and this and that. And so thank God you have Kate, right? But
yeah.
Like, what, you know, what did you do during that time to take care of yourself? It's like, what do you do to, like, get out of bed? Like, how do you even do it? That's a basic question.
I mean, there's the practical tools. I think the biggest tool, I mean, so one, I'll say practical tools, like having a morning routine and, like, is so helpful, like, because it's just like waking up, making my, you know, I make my little lemon water in the morning. I do my yoga, like, except for 20 minutes of meditation, I do my morning pages where I journal. And that just, like, really helps me reset and, like, listing things I'm grateful for. There's, like, some things that I've learned over time that really can help change my mindset so that I go into the day really clear and have perspective. Because you start losing that perspective and you start getting reactive and you wake up in the morning, you grab your phone first thing, you start checking your email and you jump in the shower and, like, then you're just, like, spiraling. And taking a moment every morning, I think, to reset is really like totally critical. So I think that's on the practical side. The thing I think gets overlooked the most is community and friends. like having other friends who are founders, having other friends, just period, who I can really open up and like share these like moments with is so critical. And like Kate, my wife, is amazing. Like she'll, if I'm like having a bad time, she'll like secretly arrange like a guy's night and have like 8 people over, and then like sneak out for the night. And she's just like, it's things like that that I think we're losing. And again, like we're replacing it with a cheap alternative of face, like getting likes on our Instagram posts. That is like, we think that that's like that social validation is a form of connection, but it's not a form of connection. And we think that we're like staying in touch with our friends, but we're so out of touch. And that is something I've been trying to be so conscious about, and something that I think really helps, frankly.
As someone who who has an extreme personality, and I totally relate to that. I'm very extreme, right? And everything I do, I don't really half-ass anything. I'm like, I have like the best days and the worst days. I can be a tornado, right? I thought it was really interesting that you really have found a way to like regulate your technology use. As a tech founder, I know there's this larger conversation about tech and addiction. And, you know, looking at this through the lens of addiction, like social media, obviously so addicting. Like, how do you... You don't even have like social media on your phone or something, or like email? Like,
I don't have social media, period, and I don't have Slack or email on my phone. And
why?
Because I'm not strong enough to fight it. Like, honestly, and I'm like, you know, you're talking to someone who like escaped like drug and alcohol addiction, right? Like, I'm not strong enough to fight those tools. They pull us in, and they're so addicting. And I know what that feels like because of my experience. And I don't want that. You know, I didn't come at it. I didn't like free myself from addiction from drugs and alcohol just to be like a slave to my phone. And just, you know, I like make the analogy to, let's say like fast food that's kind of unnaturally good, because they're using mechanisms that we all appreciate, social validation. Like, that's something that we work for and we want, but they take it and they concentrate it in a way that's just like so overstimulating, right? It's like the difference between, you know, we're designed to like sugar, but then you like create candy bars and it's like our systems don't even know what to do with that, and then like fruit doesn't taste as good anymore. And so and if you think about like the fast food analogy, you know, it's food that is way overstimulating. And then imagine if they could just put French fries in your back pocket, and not only that, but monitor like how many you ate each day, and if they could like tweak like a little bit more salt and maybe like a little bit less fat, then like that would get you to eat them even faster. And like, just like that's the reality that we're living in. Like, how many French fries would you be eating per day if it was in your back pocket and they could constantly monitor your like biometrics to figure out whether this was like even better tasting to you?
Well, I mean, I also think it's probably a lot of responsibility on you as someone who's creating an app that that is kind of at the center of these conversations, right? Because Tinder, Bumble, you know, Hinge, like all fall into this idea of, you know, the people becoming pixels thing. And I think you guys are better than the other ones. It's still hard, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's still hard. I'm going to show you mine. And I think you're going to notice like that probably we have some similar personality traits of extreme, like, I have a lot of like your turns, right, in my thing, and I like, and it's hard for me to keep up with. I mean, I sound like such a jerk saying this. Like, maybe we can cut this out.
All the people that are interested in you, and
well, I mean, by the way, are they even really that interested, or are they just pressing? You know, I don't really, you know, like, but yeah, I kind of struggle with that, you know, and I think Hinge does a better job of it, but it's still kind of an issue. So I'd be curious to know, like, the future.
The differences that you feel from Hinge are because we're literally designed around getting you out on great dates. And so there's a lot of nuances that I can talk about in terms of the way the algorithm is designed and the way that the interface is designed to make sure that you're not feeling overwhelmed with the number of people and the amount of choices, and that you're able to focus and that you're able to slow down. But we can only do so much, right? I mean, ultimately, there are options out there.
What are, like, not to geek out, but, like, what are some of, like, could you give us, like, one or two examples, like, the product that you make sure that people don't move as fast, or, like, some of the product decisions that you guys made to make sure that we don't go through, go to the worst of our human impulses?
So a big piece of it is helping people separate signal from noise, right? You're familiar with, like, signal versus noise. It's kind of like when you get a ton of matches, you don't really know where to spend your time. But that's good for engagement, retention, right? Because you're like always, like, it's a new notification and you're like coming in to check your phone. And on Hinge, by having people like an individual piece of content versus just swipe left and right, the people's selectivity is like 5x as selective, right? Because they have, there's just that extra overload of like, okay, if I like them, I really have to decide like what I like about them and what I want to say. And so unless you're really interested in someone, you just pass on them. And so there's way fewer matches on Hinge than there are on these other apps because people are way more selective. And as a result of that, our algorithm gets much better information because when you're selective, we actually really start to learn who your type is and who isn't, versus if you just swipe right on 70% of people, which some guys do on these other apps. And the other thing that's really important about Hinge is we don't hide who likes you. You see each individual person that likes you, you get a notification. We have to be so careful about who we show to whom.
I think this idea of like a data-driven approach to dating is really interesting. We talk about like we use data in every aspect of our lives to make all these decisions. But when it comes to love, we like go with our gut and our instincts. And so like so I think the future, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I totally could be, but could the future for some of these dating apps be like really trying to go back to old school matchmaking, but in a data-driven way? Like, you're going to try to be more of a matchmaker at Hinge, but based on like hardcore data analytics?
I think here's what I've learned over time being in the dating market is that everyone concentrates on the problem of getting matched up with the right person. I don't think that's the most fundamental problem. Like finding the right person, and I know this is going to sound ironic with like my whole love story and everything, but I'm not sure that there's like one person that's like going to be perfect for you. And then when we land you on that person, like everything is going to be rainbows forever. It's really helping people approach dating in a way that allows them to open up, be vulnerable, and then take those kinds of lessons that they learn into their relationship going into the future. And I think if there's any role for technology to really help us, it's to change our mindset and to help us learn how to be good, thoughtful daters and not how to match us up with the exact right person.
So, but why when I'm on Hinge, like, why does it say you're most compatible with this person? Like, give me some, like, come on, give me the juice. Like,
okay.
What's behind that? And by the way, it's not just me as a tech reporter who wants to know this, because I was sitting at a table with, like, my normal friends, and they all wanted to know that, too. Guys.
So compatibility is real. And most compatible is designed, like you said, I think people can feel overwhelmed by the amount of choice that they have on these apps. And so we try to help you really focus. So really everyone you see on Hinge is sort of is in that ethos of most compatible, someone you're likely to like, but who's also likely to like you.
Why am I likely to like them? Because of how they look?
Well, it's based on your past behavior of who you've liked and who you've passed on. So if you're purely basing it, your decisions that you make on Hinge on looks, then it will be based on looks. But if you're making it, but if you're making it based on their prompts or on their school or whatever it is, like we're going to start to learn those patterns that matter to you. And we're also going to learn the patterns that matter to everyone else. And at the end of every day, we basically take every single person and we go through them and we rank order for like you say, every person on Hinge that's eligible for you from the most, you're most likely to like them all the way down to your least likely to like them.
Oh.
And then we take all that information and we run this thing called the Gale Shapley algorithm, which solves the stable marriage problem. It's like this Nobel Prize winning algorithm. And we essentially try to figure out how can we pair everyone up so that no one would want to trade. So that it's basically just the person that you're most likely to like who's most likely to like you back. Because we could show you that number one person and you'd think they were super hot, but maybe they're like, aren't going to be back like into you as well.
I did want to know why you guys thought I would be compatible with Clement over here.
Who's Clement?
I don't know. But like, so, okay. And this, maybe I'm doing something wrong. I just took screenshots. So like,
I can't scroll through his.
Well, I just didn't understand. He says he's Buddhist, Catholic, Christian, Hindu, Jewish, Muslim, spiritual, and other. My Jewish mother is going to be like, what?
Oh, man.
So do you think, like, is it...
How do you feel about, like...
all of those things?
Well... Is it your mom's preferences or your preferences?
Well, okay, it's my preferences. Well, my mom, I'm sure at some point would love to just, you know, she's probably, I think her bar's lower now. But I do think, first of all, good looking guy, right? Mm-hmm. But I am, for some reason, it's matching, except for what is that over there?
He's creative.
I mean, are you as equally upset by Clement Sandcastle as I am?
Oh, that's Clement.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that's Clement's sandcastle. And that's not even a castle. I think that's a man he made out of the sand, a large one. Anyway, so I want to know why I'm compatible with the Clement.
Well,
is that my future?
And over by the way, time, no, we learn your preferences better. We learn other people's preferences better. And maybe we get it closer.
And is it that I'm liking too many people? So that's why Clement.
It could be. Are you liking too many people?
I might be. Like, this could be my issue. Or am I liking too few people? Also, how about Matthew? I mean, am I most compatible with that guy? Is that my future
husband?
You're
not a Burning Man guy?
No. Mm. Are you a Burning Man person?
Well, I've been before, but...
Would you wear that neck scarf shirtless?
At Burning Man, yes.
Okay.
Is he wearing a snake around his neck?
I wasn't sure if it was ammo or a snake. Anyway, so I'm very curious to know why...
Maybe you should meet up with him in real life and then... decide.
I can't wait to build sandcastles with Clement. But no, I do.
Maybe you end up with Clement in the end. And
Clement and I can have a love story like you and Kate.
Yeah.
Do you think Clement would fly to Zurich for me? I don't know. Sure. Well, so looks like I don't have trouble with my Hinge profile. I just don't respond.
There's a lot of your turns.
I know. Do you think this is like an addictive personality trait? Or do
I
you
mean,
think it's...
what's going on? Like, what's going on for you here?
That... It's just a lot to like have to... And it's like I can't really... I don't know. It's just like there's a lot of people here. And how do you really know? And like... And then once there are a lot of people, it's just like... Then it just feels like a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, do you know you're with Kate? How do you know?
Do you find that when you actually meet up with people in real life, though, that you start to click with them?
You know, I think time is hard. And I think there's nothing, for me, truthfully, it's like I'm not a person who loves to just like go out for dinner. Like I talk to people a lot for a living.
Hmm.
And I'm actually a closet introvert. Like I speak to people all the time. I'm always on. And so I have like a small group of people who I feel really comfortable with and who I really like. And I think for me, I don't want to go on a date every night. I don't know. I guess I struggle with so many people, but I don't know about the connection.
But these are like, seem like a lot of like pretty cool, eligible guys who are interested in you and trying to talk, but you just don't want to like talk back or you can't decide which one that you want to focus on.
It just feels like a lot at once. And so then I go to no one.
Mm.
Do you believe in the one?
No, I don't. I know that sounds crazy after everything I just said, but I believe that you can work and make someone the one. You know what I mean? I think that you can. I think it's like I said. I think I used to believe in the one, right? I used to believe in the idea that there was only one person out there for us, and that's why I flew over to Switzerland. And what I learned through that experience is that what made Kate the one wasn't that like she was just like this magical person, although she's a pretty magical person. It was, I think we both learned how to be like vulnerable with each other and how to like, and for me, it was a commitment thing. For me, I was in that mode of where I was always moving on to the next thing. As soon as I found a flaw or as soon as things got uncomfortable, I would just like drop and run. And the magical thing about what happened with Kate is that I like couldn't do that. You know, she moved back from Switzerland for me and like left a whole life, and I wasn't just going to be like, as soon as things got a little rough, be like, never mind. And so I stuck it out, and what I found by sticking it out with someone and learning how to like share my needs and share my vulnerabilities and share my fears and listen to hers and like imperfections, and it's very possible to have an amazing relationship with anyone if you have the right skills and if you approach it with the right attitude. And that's, I think, the ethos that gets built into Hinge, and that's been the journey that I've been on.
How has, I mean, I guess this is maybe probably one of your first interviews you've done since you had a baby.
Yeah.
What's the biggest change? Like, what's the biggest change post having baby? Like, how has it changed you?
It's cool. It's brought Kate and me closer together, which a lot of people have the opposite experience. They find like babies are stress. And hasn't been stressful for us. I think we got really lucky. We have like Kate did a home birth. She like delivered in our living room.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
Were you scared?
Yeah, a little scared. I mean, it's definitely a wild experience. You definitely feel like you're just animals, but it really starts to change your perspective in terms of like, I don't know. It feels like the Lion King in the circle of life, you know? It just feels like, oh, this isn't about me, you know? It's like so much bigger. And I was like, I jokingly said like, this is like the first step in a 3-step path to death, right? It's like father, grandfather, dead. And I was like, he's like edging me out. And it's cool to see that like this whole path just continues on. And
what do you think the future? What do you think the future of love is going to look like for that?
Ollie?
Yeah, for little Oliver. Is he going to be like finding love in the virtual world? What's it going to look like? What does Oliver have to look forward to?
Don't
screw this up, man. Oliver.
That's my hope. I mean, I think there are some pretty dark images of where we could go in the future. And my hope is that I think we learn to use technology to like find how to meet our needs more deeply and not just easier and more shallowly, right? I mean, I think it's how do we use tech to enhance human connection? How do we like deepen it? How do we use this to deepen it? Not how do we use it to manipulate people into spending time on our platforms and looking at ads. And so like, if that's where the future goes and if that's where we start to put our time and attention, I think the possibilities in the future are amazing. I'm trying to do my small piece to make that a reality.
You feel like you have a responsibility?
Huge responsibility. Yeah, I think all of us as creators in tech whose platforms touch millions of people's lives every single day, like that's a huge responsibility.
Yeah, I think tech has an extraordinary responsibility. I think for me, having been there from the second wave and interviewing a lot of these people early on, it feels like a moment where you want people to take a step back. And I know there's a lot of lip service about it, and there's a lot of people talking about it.
There's not a lot of like people who are actually operating companies talking about it or doing anything meaningful about it. You see a lot of people like, just like you see in the Senate, like people are resigning and then they're like, oh, now I'm going to speak out against all the bad things in the Senate. Like, thanks, Jeff Flake. But like, you know, it's like, what are the people who are doing or in the inside of it? And so I think that's what I'm trying to do is like, how do we show a way forward? That's also, by the way, like profitable and fun and great. Like the business model isn't unprofitable. It just is a little bit slower and a little bit like counterintuitive.
Hopefully that will change things. You know, like I've interviewed everyone from like sitting across from Mark Zuckerberg during Cambridge Analytica and looking at the issues and the problems that we're facing. This stuff is so human. I think people don't realize like, and I think tech founders sometimes have a tough time realizing it, you know, because they are surrounded by these filter bubbles. Like the impact of this is so visceral and so human. There's an extraordinary responsibility, and not just to get the line down, the PR line down to the media and whatnot. Like there's an extraordinary responsibility to us and the way we find love and the way our mental health goes. And like, and we got to find a better way in some capacity. I don't know what the answer is, you know?
I mean, it's got to be, I think we've really got to start thinking about how we, you know, because a lot of people are like, oh, like, the way we're moral as a company is we all like do community service once a year, and we like, you know, it's just like I try to always direct people at my company back to like the way that we really do good in the world is to like do good through the work that we do, and I think that's like being really thoughtful about that. And I think it's hard when you've, especially like, I can't imagine what, I mean, I'm not a sympathizer with Mark Zuckerberg, but like who can fathom like a billion people using this thing in all these different ways every day, and like what the impact that each of your little design decisions make. But that's why I think it's important to have like a really strong ethos of like how you define what your morality is and what your North Star as a company is, and that for us is design around the deeper need that people are coming to you for and not around your need to get them to engage and retain, and you'll still be profitable.
Do you think Facebook just launched a dating service? What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, based on the same, how are they going to make money through that, right? Getting you to spend more time in it looking at ads. So how do you think that that's going to be designed, right? Like,
you tell me.
I really like Hinge's business model. And by the way, this is also true even for the other ones, that they make almost all of their money through subscriptions, not through advertising. So it doesn't really serve them to like keep you stuck on the app. And but that's not true in social media, and I don't think that'll be true in an ad-supported model for Facebook. So it'll be fun and engaging probably, but
It's a Band-Aid, you think? It's not the larger.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I honestly don't even really think about it that much, yeah, because our users aren't using Facebook, period, much less using Facebook for dating, especially in the wake of everything that's happening right now. So it's not something I think about.
What's your advice for me? As a Hinge user, as someone who is addicted to tech, whatever, what's your advice to me? You seem to have it together in the love department. So as the Hinge CEO, I would like your advice.
From what I know about you, I think I want to answer this thoughtfully. I think you're doing a lot right. I do think you're doing a lot right. I wonder this idea of like slowing down a little bit, right? It's this in our dating lives and our like day-to-day lives, checking in with ourselves and figuring out, because I think sometimes it's really easy to get caught up in like good witty banter and we're like running a million miles per hour, right? But I think it's those moments when you really do get to like slow down and like recharge. And it sounds like you called yourself a closet introvert. So maybe it's taking those moments to really like slow down. And to like, it's really easy to look at your match drawer and just like be like, oh, I'm overwhelmed and I don't know what to do, as opposed to like really consider and just like, you just have to like, when you're overwhelmed, you just take baby steps one at a time slowly, and you figure out like, what do you like, who do you actually want to meet up with and who do you not? And I think getting offline is like the number one way to really figure it out. So focus on who you want to spend a little bit of time with.
Okay. I'll take it. I appreciate that. I like Justin's takeaway for me. Slow down. We move a million miles an hour. You could apply that concept to the dating apps, but really, it applies to just about everything else in the tech era. Some of us pick up our phones before we even open our eyes in the morning. I might be guilty of that. We scroll through Instagram before we even check in with ourselves. Also, I might be guilty of that. So I'll leave you with what I think Justin was trying to say to me. Slow down today. Take a moment. That might actually create some space to connect with someone. Maybe most important, connecting with yourself. I promise it'll be worth it. I'm Laurie Siegel, and this is First Contact. Sign up for our newsletter. Go to firstcontactpodcast.com to subscribe. And follow us on social. I'm at Laurie Siegel on Instagram and Twitter. And the show is at First Contact Podcast. I would love to hear your thoughts. And of course, if you like the show, you know, these are our early episodes and we want to hear from you. Please leave us a review on the Apple Podcast app or wherever you listen. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We have plenty more where this came from. Subscribe to First Contact on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. First Contact is a production of ... Media. Executive produced by Laurie Siegel and Derek Dodge. This episode was produced and edited by Luis Gallo. Our engineer was Derek Clements. Original theme music by Xander Singh. Visit us at firstcontactpodcast.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.